Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back, Raider Nation. It is a Wednesday. This is Silver and Black Today. I am Scott Culbranson. And as always, our hosting is with me on Wednesday is Mr. Hondo Carpenter. Hondo, how you doing today?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. There's a lot going on, including in the world of Raider Nation. We're going to get to that right at the top of the show. But as always, the show is powered by our good friends, Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys. 702-820-1234 is the number. And then, of course, for the last couple days, the conversation has been around Derek Carr again. Imagine that. There's never an offseason that goes by where we don't talk about Derek Carr. And again, though, I have to challenge Raider Nation out there. Read before you think and comment publicly. But joining us now is the man who wrote a story about the Raiders that was entitled, Will Raiders Trade Derek Carr to Acquire Deshaun Watson? And that, of course, is my teammate here, my good friend, host In the Huddle here next at 4 o'clock on Raider Nation Radio. And that is the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal covering the Raiders. That is Vinny Bonsignor. Vinny, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? How's it going, Hondo?
Hey, buddy, doing good. Thank you.
Well, Vinny, I know you've been a busy guy because I'm seeing you do radio spots all over the country. As it relates to your story from yesterday in the RJ, where you basically just laid out, hey, listen, Derek Carr had a great year. He was a top 10 quarterback last year in a top 10 offense. And in this league where quarterbacks rule the roost and where quarterbacks are vital to NFL teams competing for a championship, the Raiders have interest in Derek Carr. I mean, I should say other teams have interest in Derek Carr. It doesn't mean they're going to trade him, but explain to people who wouldn't take the time to read your excellent piece up on the RJ, what exactly it said and what it didn't say.
Well, a couple things. You know, down at the Senior Bowl last week in Mobile, Alabama, you know, the quarterback carousal is spinning, you know, as we speak in the NFL. And there's a combination of reasons why. Number one, you've got somebody like Deshaun Watson who has come out and said that he wants to get traded. You've got an uncertain situation in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz. You already saw, you know, over the weekend, the Rams moving Jared Goff to Detroit for Matthew Stafford had asked to be traded, and he was definitely a popular quarterback among teams that need quarterbacks. And that's the other element of it. You have teams like the Colts. You have teams potentially like the New Orleans Saints, the New England Patriots, the Washington Football Club, the Chicago Bears, who have needs at quarterback and are otherwise good teams that are, you know, if you look at the rest of their roster, are playoff teams that need quarterbacks, either in the form of an upgrade or just strictly, we need a quarterback. You know, Philip Rivers is retired. Drew Brees is expected to retire. Tom Brady is no longer in New England. So you have that combination. You have a market. You have a landing spots and needs. And so as a result of that, and especially now with Matthew Stafford coming off the market, teams are looking, you know, for viable options. And Derek Carr, based on his age, based on the season that he's put together, not just this year, but the one last year as well, based on his contract, is somebody that teams are interested in. That's the main part of the story. And that was what I was hearing in Mobile, that teams are going to put together proposals potentially to take it to the Raiders to see if, hey, is this, you know, would you be willing to trade Derek Carr for X, Y, and Z? Now, the other part of that coin is, okay, if you're the Raiders, why would you move on from Derek Carr? He's a top 10 mm-hmm. quarterback this year by all statistical measures. The offense that he played in and oversaw was the 10th best scoring team in the NFL. Your offense is set. You're really looking to get better now on defense. Why would the Raiders, you know, make that move? Well, you know, in canvassing general managers, decision makers across the NFL, you could use the Derek Carr piece If you're, you know, and it all is dependent on what's going on with Houston and Deshaun Watson, because you can't just move Derek Carr without having a viable replacement, much like the Rams. They weren't just going to trade Jared Goff. They saw an opportunity to go get better than what they had in Matthew Stafford and probably overpaid a little bit to go get Matthew Stafford. But they really, trust me when I say they really wanted Matthew Stafford and feel like, hey, if we got to beat other people out of the water or blow some other teams out of the water in doing so, we're going to do it because we feel like he's a 9 with our 10 coach and that can get us closer to the Super Bowl. So from the Raiders' perspective, it's the same exact thing. You're not going to just move Derek Carr, even if there are some compelling offers, which I expect there to be compelling offers. You're still not going to just trade him. You have to have a viable replacement, and that's where Derek or Deshaun Watson comes into play in terms of if you can get it to 2 first-round picks, which multiple decision-makers and general managers have told me, there could be a path to that. If there's multiple teams that are interested, and that's expected to be the case, and a little bit of a bidding war comes into play, you can get it to 2 first-round picks for Derek Carr. That's not an unreasonable price at that point. Look what Matthew Stafford, who Derek Carr played better than last year, got to move to the Rams. And so where the viable replacement comes into play, there's not many quarterbacks right now as currently constructed that are better than Derek Carr in the NFL, and certainly not many that are available. Watson might be available. And so if you're the Raiders, the only way you move a Derek Carr is if you have assurances that you could take the 2 first-round picks that you get from Washington, Chicago, or Indianapolis, or whoever it might be, pair them with your 2 first-round picks that you have in 2021 and 2022, and now you're able to go make a Godfather offer to the Houston Texans. And in reality, if it did play out that way, which I'm not saying it will, a lot of has to happen, obviously. You know, the Raiders would be looking at trading Derek Carr and their 2 first-round picks, you know, one in 2021 and one in 2022 for Deshaun Watson. That's really what the trade would be, because the 2 picks that they would be getting for Derek Carr aren't really theirs. You know, it would never be theirs. It would just go right, be diverted right to Houston. So the story is that there's a lot of interest in Derek Carr, but for the Raiders to move Derek Carr, they'd have to have a backup option that's better than Derek Carr. But there's a way, and talking to decision makers and general managers, there's a way that the Raiders could take advantage of that attractiveness of Derek Carr to go get an even better version of Derek Carr, just a better player than Derek Carr and Deshaun Watson.
You know, Vinny, this brings up a good point. By the way, it was a great article that you wrote. And the thing that we talked about on Monday's show, and Scott and I did, is that we'd heard that already teams were inquiring about Derek. There was interest there. And while everyone's making the story about the path to potentially being a Deshaun Watson in Las Vegas, people are missing the fact with the group that basically thinks that Derek Carr's trash. There's a lot of other NFL teams that see a lot of high value in him, is there not?
Yeah, and, you know, Sean McVay would always say, the ones who know, know.
Right.
The fans think they know, but the fans don't necessarily always know. The ones who know, know. The NFL understands what Derek Carr is, what he represents, and how good he is. You know, the statistics don't lie. I know that Raider fans, and rightfully so, are extremely frustrated, over what's happened during the years that Derek has been the quarterback. But if you're looking at it honestly and objectively, and other teams and other decision makers and other scouts and other talent evaluators, their job is to cut through it all to find out who is this player and, you know, what kind of a grade do we give him? The player, not the team around him, the success, the wins and losses, all of that. You're looking strictly at the player. And when honest evaluators look at Derek Carr, they see a very capable quarterback in a system like New Orleans or Washington or the Colts. That's a pretty good fit right there. Is he Deshaun Watson? Obviously, he's not Deshaun Watson. Nobody's saying that he is, but he's in that next realm underneath there, and statistics show that, and history has shown that you can win pretty big with a quarterback like that, with a bunch of, you know, otherwise good players around.
Yeah, and Vinny, again, Vinny Bonsignore is our guest here. We're talking about Derek Carr and his story, about the Raiders getting calls about Derek Carr and his value as a trade piece. Should the Raiders, not that they're going to, but if why not entertain offers, especially when, Vinny, you consider Derek Carr coming off that great year. You know, just like when you talk about selling high, not when it's low, that's when you do it. So you at least entertain offers. Now, unlike previous years where there was rumors about trades, rumors that Gruden didn't like Carr, which were all not really based in a lot of truth. This one is a little different. If you're Derek Carr today, how do you feel about this versus how you felt about it in years past?
Well, I mean, if you're Derek Carr, you don't like your name being out there in this way, and I totally understand, his thoughts on that. If you're Derek Carr, you want to be in Las Vegas. You want to be with the Raiders. Mm-hmm. You want to sign an extension with the Raiders. Let's keep in mind, he's got 2 years left on his deal, but none of that money is guaranteed. He's in kind of a vulnerable spot, based on that. So, and he wants to be here, and he feels like, after going through everything that he's gone through with the Raiders, he wants to be here when it gets turned around, and chances are he's going to be. That's what I think, readers and fans need to understand. But at the same time, this is a business, and just like Jared Goff went through what he just went through and got traded from Los Angeles to Detroit, anything is possible. Now more than ever, given how I think more creative and more open-minded teams are to dealing first-round picks. The Buffalo Bills did it for Stephon Diggs. The Seattle Seahawks did it, 2 first-round picks and a third-round pick, I think, and maybe some other assets to go get Jamal Adams. The Indianapolis Colts did this very thing last year to go get DeForest Buckner. So, the teams are more willing to part ways with the end all be all first round picks that we've always romanticized them as, understanding that, hey, I could get value, more certainty by dealing it and getting a proven player. And there's one other thing I want to stress. If you look at the teams that would be interested in Derek Carr and the ones that are interested in Derek Carr, there's you can't just say a first-round pick and expect that to be completely, the same in every situation. A first-round pick for the Indianapolis Colts this year has nothing on a first-round pick of the New York Jets or somebody that's in the top 10. There's no way, shape, or form will Derek Carr or many other quarterbacks in this league get traded for top 10 first-round picks, or a first-round pick that's in the top 10 right now, right, one that's projected to be a top 10 pick, barring some major turnaround next year. These would be first-round picks that are at the tail end of the first round. But then you ask, well, why would that be attractive, to a team like the Houston Texans? Well, if you're the Texans, you've given away a lot of picks over the years to go get, some players in some ill-advised, trades and moves that they have made. But if you're the Texans, and I'd have to look to see if they do have a first-round pick this year or next year, but let's just assume that they do. Now all of a sudden you're talking about having 2 first-round picks this year and 2 first-round picks next, or 3 actually. If you have your own, you would be getting 3 this year and then round picks next year. That's not a bad situation to be in, when compared to going into a season with a quarterback that is either extremely disgruntled and doesn't want to be there, or isn't even showing up if it gets to that point. I'm not saying that Deshaun Watson is going to hold out or anything like that. I don't know that to be the case, but he has expressed some level of misgivings about being in Houston. And that's never a good situation to be in. So 3 first-round picks, I'd have to look again to see where the Texans are on the first-round picks. But 3 first-round picks this year and Necker is a pretty good starting point for them to begin their rebuild.
Yeah, and Vinny, I mean, before I let you go, too, the one thing I would say, too, is if you're a Raiders fan, if you're especially a Derek Carr fan, and you're upset over this talk, you have to also understand the position that the Raiders are in, where you always have to entertain offers, that no one is really untouchable ever. The percentage chances that this all happens are at this time not great. I think you pegged it at like, if Houston was willing to play ball, I think you pegged it at like 80%, but that's, we don't have that yet. And so if I'm the Raiders too, and I'm looking at first round draft picks, my own and wherever I could acquire a couple others, especially this year, with what happened with COVID, you just don't know what's going to happen with the draft. The draft, the first round of the draft, especially the second half of the first round, is not even close to a guarantee. And so if you're the Raiders, you have to entertain offers and you have to have conversations, but it doesn't mean anything's going to happen. I know, Vinny, you're going to talk a lot more about this coming up at 4 o'clock. What else do you have coming up on In the Huddle?
Yeah, and we also have Jonathan Abram coming on in the huddle, so we'll get a chance to talk to Jonathan about the season that he's coming off. If he's been able to talk to the new defensive coordinator, Bradley, and really specifically his the secondary coach, Juan Miles, and where that those conversations have taken him. Also wants to talk about some of the training that he's doing this offseason, so we're looking forward to talking to Jonathan. And, of course, we're going to talk about all this quarterback scuttlebutt, but if I were to, sum it up in one way, it truly is a compliment to Derek Carr. So, and I know that on some level he totally understands that and gets it. There's a market for him. There's no doubt there's a market for him, and the Raiders aren't going to just give him away if it ever came to that. It would have to be tied into something that makes them better at quarterback, which is hard to do when you're talking about a quarterback the caliber of Derek Carr.
Yeah, no data. Vinny Bonsignor in the huddle coming up at 4 o'clock. Vinny, thanks again for joining us.
All right, guys. Have a great show. Take care, Hondo.
Thanks, Vinny.
All right. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to switch. We're going to talk about draft picks. And Rick Saratella from the NFL Draft Bible will be with us. We'll talk to him about the draft coming up, not only what players to watch out for, maybe some guys you could look for at the Raiders selections, but also how COVID and the weird college football season and opt-outs and all that, how that's going to impact the draft. You're with Hondo and Scott here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back, Silver and Black Today, the Hump Day Edition. That's right, you're halfway there, folks. And halfway to Super Bowl weekend. Oh, yeah. Enjoy that one last professional football game before you don't see it until the end of next summer. But in between, a lot happening in the NFL. Scott Culbranson back with you, my special guest co-host, as always on Wednesdays, Mr. Hondo Carpenter, who is, of course, the publisher of the Raider Maven website, part of the SI Now website, family. Hondo, the draft's coming up, right? So we had to turn to one of the preeminent experts in the draft, and we now welcome on the newsmaker line Mr. Rick Saratella. He is the creator of the NFL Draft Bible. If you are a draft Nick, going back way in the days before it was a lot, took a lot more effort to find stuff. I'm sure Rick was there at that time. Rick, thanks for joining us here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio. Rick, you there?
How we doing? Yeah.
You are. Okay, great.
Ready to chop it up.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Listen, so you talk about this year when it comes to the NFL draft. It's like a year like no other. College football disrupted, kids opting out, no combine for the NFL. When you look at this, what's the overall impact, do you think, on the professional game, on the draft itself, leading up to the draft? And might the draft cadence that we have all become used to over the last 10 years or so, might it change permanently because of this?
Well, I think we might see a virtual NFL draft again, and maybe some of those elements might be here to stay. But I think at the end of the day, where it becomes difficult and challenged to navigate through these tough times that the COVID-19 pandemic has dealt us, it's like, hey, what if I told you that you're a multi-billion-dollar company and we've got to hire 7 new employees by April, but you won't be able to meet with these young individuals. You won't be able to talk to them in person. You won't be able to get a feel for their personality, look them in the eye, ask them the hard questions, and see what their body language tells you. How would you feel about that proposition? Not too good, right? So I think that's the big challenge the Senior Bowl really being the only evaluation platform where scouts can communicate, interact, because at the end of the day, fellas, the more I do this, the more I realize, hey, everybody's talented, right? We're investing in the person. What's between the ears? What's in the heart? And that's the most difficult challenge when you're relegated to Zoom calls and relying on third-party information.
Rick, this is Hondo Carpenter. First, let me say congratulations to having you part of the SI family. It was a blessing to us to get somebody of your caliber. I'm proud to call you a colleague, friend. Second of all, I was talking to an assistant general manager last week who told me what he's most excited about in this draft is the teams that invest big in scouting and big in the whole entire process of the draft. This could be the year that they really separate themselves. Do you agree with that? And what are some teams that you think do that well?
Well, no doubt about it. I think you're going to see the haves and the have-nots. And thank you, Hondo. I am happy to be part of the Sports Illustrated family and proud to work with your brother. And when I got the call from Hondo, I had to say for sure, though. And so, you know, I think the Bengals now, they're going to be at a disadvantage because there's a team historically. They don't pay scouts. They don't have a lot of scouts. And really, they get their coaching staff involved in the scouting process when January rolls around. Usually the whole season is ending, right? And now, you know, the Bengals coaching staff essentially becomes the scouting department. And so, like, they're really going to be at a disadvantage because other teams like the Patriots, the Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, these are organizations that have veteran scouts that attack all schools. And I'll tell you, I go to the most obscure pro days, fellas, and there's always the New England Patriots there, right? They've always got somebody there. It's unbelievable. And so, you know, teams like that that have the veteran scouts, and it's all about the callbacks today. In today's day and age, it's all about the callbacks because guess what? Now you've got 32 organizations, and everybody else is in their mama, sister, brother trying to contact these schools to talk to the players, the coaches, the pro liaisons. And guess what? They're not going to call everybody back. But those that have the relationships, those that have been going into the same schools, I've got I'm in New Jersey, here in the Northeast. I got a handful of schools I've been going for the last 20 years. Guess what? I'm getting that call back. But, you know, the new kid on the block, and you see a lot of scouting departments around the league getting younger, being information gatherers, and they're just not going to get the callbacks.
That's interesting. Rick Saratello from NFL Draft Bible joins us. Rick, obviously we're focused on the Raiders here too, and we'll get back to general draft stuff, but where do the Raiders fall in that area when you're talking about, you know, the haves and the have-nots? Has that changed over time as John Gruden and Mike Mayock have come in and taken over the football operation?
Well, I'll preface it by saying I've come a long ways where I used to be against hiring a head coach first and then bringing in the GM. But I'm looking around the league now, and I feel like that the head coach, the GM, they do need to be connected. You know, whether or not the head coach should have the final say like they do in Las Vegas, you know, that's a topic for another conversation. But kudos to Mike Mayock. I don't care what you say about the Raiders draft. Mike Mayock is combing the nation from country to country, you know, from coast to coast. I've seen it. I interact with Mike all the time. I've seen him out west at Oregon. You know, I see him at Cal, and then the next weekend I see him at Rutgers, Michigan State. He's all over the place, Mike Mayock. So I think that you're doing the work, and you have the influential decision makers. Mike Mayock's going out and doing the scouting himself. Now, he also has, you know, his guys. But I think at the end of the day, Mayock is pushing that information up to Gruden, who, let's be honest, fellas, you can't be a head coach and the GM, and that's the kind of situation you got going on in Las Vegas right now.
Rick, I've been very familiar with your work for so long, and one of the reasons I was ecstatic that you joined us at SI is the fact everybody can probably get the first 20 to 40 picks pretty accurate. You know who those guys are. But, Rick, you make a living, and you're so respected because you know number 40 through 80, number 40 through 100. You know those guys that fans and the Quick Magazine writers don't know who are going to be impact players. So when you get into the third, fourth, and fifth round, can you give us some defensive players that people maybe aren't talking about? But with the Raiders in such need of defensive help, guys that you think in rounds 3 to 5 will be great value picks who could play and contribute right away?
Yeah, let's take a look. I mean, you know, you're talking about day three guys kind of under the radar prospects, which is, you know, what we do here at the NFL Draft Bible. So I appreciate, you know, allowing us to dig a little bit deeper. All right, let's look. If you're looking for a linebacker on day three, how about Monty Rice? He's just a hard-nosed, big, rangy guy that, you know, not really big, but he's a rangy guy where he covers a lot of ground. And I think he's the guy that you can have on day three who's going to outperform some guys that get selected ahead of him. Another guy is Cameron Sample, who was down at the Senior Bowl, right? You know, you talk about getting some help up front on the defensive line. Now, Cameron Sample out of Tulane, he went down there, and again, not your prototypical body type, right? You know, 6'1", about 270, but can play up and down that defensive line. Really held his own there down in Mobile against some of the Power 5 prospects. So Cameron Sample, I thought, was a guy that made himself some money. I'll give you a small school prospect now. Ellerson Smith from Northern Iowa. Here's an impressive young man who, at 6'7", 245 pounds, I had him on my show last week. He said he's got to eat 4,400 calories per day, fellas, just to maintain his weight. So if you draft Ellerson Smith, you may also have to select an extra cafeteria worker to come on board those calories as well. A couple other guys here. We got Jonathan Cooper, Ohio State. He came in, you know, he crossed the weigh-ins, right? He came in at like 256. He's a defensive lineman at Ohio State playing in a rotation. And you say, hey, what are you going to get? But he comes into the Senior Bowl, and he's impressive all week, and he's got a high floor, right? He's not one of these top high-ceiling guys, right, which is why he's going to go day three. But you know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who's going to come in, contribute immediately, be consistent, contribute to the rotation, and you know, that's what you're looking for on a day three type of selection. I can go on here all day. Keith Taylor from Washington, the big body cornerback, if you want a corner. I mean, he's a guy that, even though despite his size, he's like 6'2", he can cover the small guys too. He can line up against the tight ends too. And playing against Travis Kelce, you're going to need a guy like Keith Washington who maybe can be that equalizer.
Rick Saratello from NFL Draft Bible joins us. And Rick, one of the other needs that I think going to the other side of the ball, the Raiders, clearly their priority is on defense. On offense, they really are, I think, going to look in later rounds, whether it's even as early as 2 maybe, but more likely later on, is for a running back. Who do you see that has impressed you that might be available in that third or fourth round that could come in and spell Josh Jacobs, who really needs somebody there that can take some of the snaps so he can stay on the field?
I'm looking at Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech. Here's a nice guy that could be Josh Johnson, right? I mean, I saw him last year when he was at Kansas, who you guys know was a terrible program. 35-point underdogs. They come into to Pittsburgh, I think it was. I'm at the game, and here comes Khalil Herbert rushing for like 200-300 yards, putting the team on his back. Maybe it was Boston College, one of these teams. They were 35-point underdogs, guys. They won the game outright because Khalil Herbert carried the team on his back. Now, here I am a year ago telling anybody and anyone who listens to me, Khalil Herbert's the best running back I've seen all year. Khalil Herbert. Now he transfers to Virginia Tech, has a monster season. And I don't know, you know, I don't see any running backs in the first round, so I think he maybe gets pushed back a little bit. I think he would be a good value pick. I love Jarrett Patterson from Buffalo. Nobody talks about this guy, right, because he's playing in the MAC. He's, you know, mid-American conference guy. You know, nobody's talking about Jarrett Patterson, but he reminds me so much of Ray Rice. And, you know, he's a guy that's been on our radar. I remember his first game, his freshman debut. Sometimes, fellas, when you see a guy, you just know. The first time I watched Jarrett Patterson, I said, man, I remember talking to one of the NFL guys. Did you see that Buffalo running back? They said, yeah, he's got some gears. And I'll put one other guy on your radar, Ramondre Stevenson from Oklahoma, big body back. you know, can surprisingly catch the ball out of the backfield at like 245, and he's got some wiggle to him too. So I like this Ramondre Stevenson from Oklahoma. You talk about Dimitri Felton from UCLA. He could play running back. He could play slot. He can return kicks. There's a dynamic player if you want to change up, you know, change of pace, slasher. And then Trey Sermon, you saw what he did in the college football playoffs. He's now got what they call a fractured collarbone, and so he may slide and be available as well.
All right. That's good stuff, man. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to just to see how the draft unfolds because of everything that happened off. But I do know that if you keep track, you follow NFL Draft Bible, you read Rick, and you're going to be just good. And Rick, we'll have you on as we get closer to the draft and definitely get your breakdown as we figure out what's going to go on and if the Raiders keep any of their picks based on the recent reports or if they're trying to move them off. But we certainly appreciate you taking the time with us here today.
Yeah, there's some smoke in the fires out there in Las Vegas, so we'll see what happens. But appreciate the time, fellas. Anytime you want to have me back, I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, Rick Seratella from NFL Draft Bible. You can follow him at Rick, RICSERRITELLA. Rick Seratella, great stuff. All right, Hondo and I are going to take a break. When we come back, we roll on. We're going to switch gears, talk about the Super Bowl, specifically the Kansas City Chiefs. Jay Binkley from 610 Sports Kansas City will be our guest. You're on with Hondo and Scott, Silver and Black today.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Bring out the funk, Hondo.
Hey, that's some good music. Keep up the music.
Chris has got it rolling back in the studio. Scott Gilbranson joined by Hondo Carpenter today. This is Silver and Black Today, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, the injury attorney, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. We're switching gears. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl coming up Sunday. Yesterday, we devoted a bunch of time talking about the Buccaneers. Today, we're going to switch gears and talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. And when I want to talk Kansas City Chiefs, I call my buddy Jay Binkley from 610 Sports KC. Jay, thanks for joining me. Kansas City all abuzz again with the possibility of back-to-back Super Bowls.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's kind of been the mindset this whole season. Wanted to get back, get the whole coaching staff back, and Patrick, Andy, and everybody. And it's been all about business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's ask this. I mean, was there any expectation other than this ending? I mean, after last year and what the Chiefs were able to do, the fact that they've won, 27 games with only one loss, was there any expectation in Kansas City other than to be in Tampa in this game?
No, I think that's where they've gotten themselves now, too, which is a good problem. Now, they haven't been with Super Bowl since the 69 season. The 1970 Super Bowl until last year. And then it was, all right, what's the expectation? What are you happy with, Chiefs fans? Because they've taken these steps. They went 21 years without winning a playoff game. Then they get to the AFC title game, losing overtime to the Patriots. Okay, getting to Tampa Bay. The owner even said at Clark Hunt last year, training team, because our goal is to go to the Super Bowl in Miami. Our goal is to win the trophy with my dad's name on it, he said, the Lamar Hunt Trophy, and our goal is to go to the Super Bowl and win. I mean, put the expectations from the organization right out there to the players. And this year, it's about winning it. I mean, they've gotten to this point. Will they be satisfied? And will they be okay with losing to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? Yeah, the expectations are from the fan base here. They want to go ahead and run it back and win two in a row. They know that every time you go there, you're not going to win it. But I think the expectations are now with this team, this quarterback, this head coach, to get back in the Super Bowl every year. And anything else, I think, would be a disappointment.
Jay, first of all, thanks for joining us. But second of all, I want to ask you about Andy Reid. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in NFL history. Part of that is because he's in Philly, where they were never happy. Then he goes to Kansas City, which is one of the most loyal fan bases in the world. In your interactions with him and covering him on a day-to-day, Is he even better than you thought he was watching him from a distance in Philly before he got there?
Yeah, I mean, just the way he's so detailed in his approach. And he's got the unique ability to be a player's coach with the players liking, like to tease him a little bit. But then also have that disciplinary action about you where the players don't want to be in his doghouse. It's not a very pleasant place to be. It's a very fine line to walk where you get the respect of your players. They want to have fun with you, tease with you a little bit, but yet they know where the line is, and they know what your expectations are. Because we've seen the players' coaches, we've seen the disciplinarians. It's been a fine line to have both those qualities of a head coach.
Jay Binkley from 610 Sports Kansas City joins us. And the one thing I'll say during the last 2 years, if you look at 2008, going back to the last time when the Chiefs were in the AFC Championship game losing to the Patriots, when they came back, they bring in Steve Spagnuolo, who comes in, and that defense really made a drastic improvement. Going back to 2018, they were 31st in the league in yards per game. They were, I think, 24th in the league in points per game. Now, since that time, I think they're 7th in the points and the yards per game. They're right around the middle, around 15. Talk about the impact that Spagnuolo's had coming in there and that defense. And does that defense really get enough love in the shadow of Mahomes and Kelce and Hill?
Yeah, a lot of the talent. Kind of resides on the offensive side. One of Steve Spagnuolo's biggest things was he had that year off, and he spent a lot of that year in the NFL Films lab in Philadelphia. They joke about that he had an office there. And he kind of had to rebuild himself, his career, what direction he wanted to go. Got the call from Andy Reid. Came here, brought in all new coaches. I mean, they cleaned house with everybody in the defensive side. Brings in all new defensive coaches. Brings a defensive line coach from the Patriots, Brendan Staley, who's been his 5th Super Bowl in a row at this point. He brings in a Honey Badger. That was the first big move. Go out and get Tyrann Mathieu, a guy that can help teach the defensive scheme to the younger players. That was one. Step two was going out and getting Frank Clark to this defense to have a little bit of that bite, a little bit of that attitude, a little bit of that nasty that they were missing. And Spags did that, and he created this environment for this defense that really took off kind of after that Mexico City game, or actually during halftime of the Mexico City game in 2018 against the Chargers. And having his complete staff back this year, have everybody understand his expectations, which is good. Let's face it, had the pandemic been a year ago, it would have been tough. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs had a year under Spagnuolo and his coaches, and Spags knew the defensive personnel, but had it happen this year and you're trying to install a new defense and new coaches and not being able to have OTs and minicamps, it would have been an issue, to be honest with you. But he's really gelling and he's blitzing a lot, the points per game, and he's using his creativity. And trust me, there's one defensive coordinator Tom Brady doesn't want to see. It's Steve Spagnuolo. He ruined his perfect season, the Super Bowl with the Giants.
I want to ask you about, I mean, everyone knows Patrick Mahomes, but what is the most underrated part of this team?
I think it's Travis Kelce. He's starting to get his run, and he gets his run. He needs a lot more run than what he's getting. We're talking about the only tight end in history to have 5 straight years of 1,000 yards. The previous record was 3, and then Travis had his own record of 4. He was tied with Greg Olsen with 3. He's got 2 more years past that of 5, and he's not slowing down at all. I'd expect him to get 6. He was number 1 in the AFC last year in receiving yards in 19. He was 2nd in all the NFL this year in receiving yards, which is insane for a tight end, set the tight end receiving yardage record. I mean, honestly, it's not because I'm in Kansas City. You look at his numbers and what he's done. This guy's first ballot in a legitimate talk about being the greatest of all time at that position. It's a real argument to have. There's no tight end have ever put up receiver numbers like Travis Kelce has.
Yeah, remarkable stuff. Jay Binkley from 610 Sports in Kansas City. Jay, let's focus on the game now. Of course, the Chiefs favored going in, despite Tom Brady's pedigree and Super Bowl history. But when you look at this, I think you know the for the Buccaneers, whose defense has really come on strong at the end of the season, they've created problems. They've gone on the road for two straight games in the playoffs and beat Aaron Rodgers, of course, and Drew Brees. When you look at what the Chiefs are going to have to contend with from the Tampa Bay defense, do you look at the Tampa Bay defense and see a way for them to stop the Chiefs and that high-powered offense?
Man, it's going to be tough. They look a lot better since the Week 12 meeting against the Chiefs, because the Chiefs did whatever the hell they wanted to do to the Buccaneers. I mean, they couldn't cover Tyreek Hill then. There's questions, can they do it now? Tyreek had over 200 yards in the first quarter. It is up a 269 and three touchdowns. They couldn't stop it. And now their safeties, their two starting safeties, really questionable for the game. And Jordan Whitehead is a big one last week. Antoine Winfield that missed that Packers game a week ago. But they struggled against this offense. Chiefs left 18 points off that board. Like, if you go back and watch that game, Mecole Hardman dropped a touchdown wide open where he would have gone 70 yards. With his speed, there was nobody. He was in the flat, Mahomes got him, dropped it. And there was another touchdown they left off the board. They decided to kick a field goal instead of going for a touchdown early in that game. But on the post game, my daughter says the Chiefs left 18 points off the board in this Buccaneers game. Then Tom started coming back. Then at the end of the game, it was Patrick Mahomes picking up two first downs with his legs, sliding in bounds, hitting Tyreek Hill to ice the game away. Patrick Mahomes became the icer in that game, like he's done so many different times, keeping Tom Brady on the other sideline. But yeah, it's going to be tough for this defense. The only thing they can hope for is the Chiefs' banged-up offensive line. They can put enough pressure on Patrick Mahomes to have to release the ball quicker and not allow Tyreek Hill to make his breaks against Carlton Davis.
All right, well, one last question for me, if you don't mind, because I'm fascinated by this. They lose, of course, their big tackle. There's some other injuries. I've known that tackle a long time. I'm just curious, Tom Fisher, of course, but your thoughts, health-wise, are they in pretty good shape? What's your opinion?
Yeah, they're in pretty good shape. Yeah, they had two guys go on the COVID list because of a barber that came in, and they're lucky. This situation could have been a lot worse. They had this barber come in. They had tested him five straight days before he came into the facility. He cut two members of the Chiefs' hair. He was halfway through a haircut. They had rapid tested him that day, pulled him, and said, "Hey, man, you guys, there was 20 Chiefs lined up to get haircuts from the barber with COVID, including Patrick Mahomes." And they got it stopped with the backup center. And by the way, he's tested negative every single day. It looks like he'll play, but he's the backup center. That was DeMarcus Robinson is the one that doesn't matter more. And there's no offense to Kilgore, but Robinson will see the field a lot more. And he is tested negative every single day, too. So it looks like he's going to play. Willie Gay, their second-round pick this year, was hurt towards meniscus, so he's out of this game as well. He and Eric Fisher right now are the biggest injury concerns for the Chiefs.
All right.
Well, they're not playing.
Jay, what give us your prediction. I mean, I assume you're by what you said about the Chiefs offense versus that Bucs defense, you think the Chiefs are going to win this game. Is it going to be a close game, or you think that the Chiefs are going to be able to pull away in the second half?
You know what? All the Chiefs games lately have been close. I expect this to be within 6 points. And I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think it's going to go back and forth. And here's the thing. The fact that the Buccaneers are playing at their home stadium, that doesn't bother the Chiefs at all. As a matter of fact, they're the only team in the National Football League to be undefeated on the road this year. And home teams this year, first time ever, under 500. 127, 128, and 1 home teams were this year. So that doesn't bother them at all. They're treating this game like a road game. They're in Kansas City now. They'll be in Kansas City for the rest of the week. They're flying to Tampa on Saturday, playing the game Sunday, flying home. This is a road game for the Chiefs like they're accustomed to play. And Tom Brady, sometimes I think he throws the ball where 32-year-old Tom Brady makes the play. He threw three interceptions a week ago against the Packers. And guys like the Honey Badger roaming around. Rashad Breeland's got two picks in his career against Tom Brady. And Spagnuolo likes to come up with a system to make Brady feel uncomfortable. He understands the role, because before he got here, Tom Brady was unscathed in games. Spagnuolo's dialed up five straight corner blitzes in five straight games and five straight sacks for the Chiefs. I do feel that they'll make Tom Brady feel uncomfortable at times. And he looks uncomfortable at times. He throws the ball. That's why it's getting picked off, because it's not going with the velocity that he had once before.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jay Binkley, 610 Sports in Kansas City. Hey, man, enjoy the weekend, and I know I'll catch up with you soon later in the week.
You bet, guys. You guys take care, man.
All right, there you go, Jay Binkley. Some info on the Chiefs, what he has
what
to say.
What a great guest.
Yeah, Jay's a great guy. We want to hear what you guys have to say. 702-365-9200 is the number. We went through a lot there this first hour, Hondo, from the Derek Carr situation to the draft to the Super Bowl, all in three consecutive segments. So we want to get Raider Nation on. 702-365-9200 is the number if you want to be part of the show. But, Hondo, I hear what he's saying about the Super Bowl being – a back-and-forth affair, and the fact that, you know, the Chiefs, despite the fact that they have that offense and they can get moving pretty quickly, that Tampa defense has played pretty good. So I expect it. I don't expect it to be as close as six, though. I think I'm thinking two touchdowns, but I think they pull away late.
Yeah, I did told someone I thought nine. I thought more than a touchdown, but not double digits. I think you and I are on this exact same page, Scott. I think Tom Brady is a very good quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the top in all of NFL football, but he's not with the Tom Brady he used to be. And, you know, I just think that comes down to that. And I think that Kansas City defense is undervalued, and I think that's where you're going to see the biggest difference.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I want to revisit, because we had three consecutive guests there, so we haven't had time to go back and talk about the Derek Carr. And I know you and I are aligned on this one, Hondo, which is, you know, the chances of Derek Carr being traded, I think, are slim. But if you're the Raiders, because he had such a good season, because he is coveted, I mean, that's the point to make here, is he's coveted, you have to listen. I see a lot of Raider Nation saying, well, you're a hater. Well, no, you're not a hater if your team or if you say, hey, I'll listen, because you have to be able to listen. You never know when that Herschel Walker trade is going to walk in the door. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen in this case. It probably will never happen that bad again, but you never know. And I think that people, when they see talk like this, we have to remember it's hard, I know, as a fan, to put the fan hat down for a minute and look at it from the business perspective. And that's all this is, Hondo, right? It's just a business. People pick up the phone. Okay, tell me what you got. And you explore a couple things. But it doesn't mean you're actively shopping the player.
No, they're not shopping him at all. I mean, Scott, and this is no disrespect to Vinny, because you know and you can tell the fans, I have immense respect for Vinny. But we talked about on the show on Monday, go listen to the podcast, they were getting calls. That wasn't a secret. Derek's very good, and with all the complaining about Derek, teams had to call. Well, you and I knew that on Monday. And so it wasn't a secret that they called. And when they call, you have to listen. But listen, it's going to have to be something completely ridiculous.
Yes.
Completely ridiculous. Ridiculous, or Derek Carr's coming back. The only people unhappy with Derek Carr are the Raider fans being baited by national media who are trying to create a controversy so they'll click. Period. Yeah. End of discussion.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that too. And, you know, I have said, and I predicted, if you go back to last summer, even before we were on this air and we were on the other station, I said Derek Carr would have a big 2020, and he did. I really had every sense to believe, being in a third year John Gruden system, knowing what they were adding around him, that he would. So I think, though, that people today, and this goes across, and I know, Hondo, we've talked about it on the show before, if you have an opinion about something or if you want to explore something, it doesn't mean you hate a guy, you don't like them. Now, there are people out there who have this unnatural and I just think sick satisfaction out of wanting to take a piece of flesh out of Derek Carr. I don't know what the issue is there, but nonetheless, there's an audience out there for that as well, and I think they feed into this stuff. But if you read Vinny's story, if you read Hikaru's story up on your website, up on the Raider Maven website, talking about the situation, it makes so much sense. And if you read it and you understand what the discussion is, then you're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, that could happen too. And, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer might leave her husband and come marry me. You know, look, anything can happen, but that's not going to happen. And I think people need to keep that in mind. that if people talk about it, it doesn't mean they think it's going to happen. Even if they report on it, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. But you're right. There are the clickbait guys out there who are trying to fan the flames because they know Raider Nation has such a passionate fan base, has the best fans in all of sports, I believe. They're trying to take advantage of that. So don't fall for it, folks. All right. We're going to take a top of the hour break here. When we come back, Q Myers is going to jump in, and we're going to talk to Raiders all-time sack leader Greg Townsend. We're going to talk to Greg about not only the Super Bowl and what it was like for him as a young player playing in the Super Bowl with the likes of Lyle Alzado and Howie Long and those guys from the Super Bowl 18 team. But we'll also ask him about the Super Bowl this year. We'll ask him about the Raiders' defense and what it needs to do to turn that corner going into the new year under Gus Bradley. You're with Hondo and Scott here on Silver and Black Today.